You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, King Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's American Horror Story After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's American Horror Story After Show.
All right. Listen to that AfterBuzz American Horror Story music going on right now. All right. Well, Bing is for doing, and we are here, or I am here, doing the American Horror Story AfterBuzz After Show for Season 2, Episode 11, titled Continuum. Our host, David Skifalidi, is not here tonight due to an unfortunate working schedule malfunction. And then our amazing JC Rubio is also out sick. But they are with us in spirit. And if you would like to, you can definitely call us during this After Show podcast at 424-256-1729. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
you got it.
I was going to say 24, but no. 424-256-1729. And since it's only me today, Stephen Lemieux, I will be going ahead and just breaking down it through the scenes that we saw in the episode. Because we did have, I mean, when you watch the episode, it seemed it was very 15-minute block segments. Like, we had the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth one, and very rarely did they even cut back at all this episode, which is kind of new. Like, we don't see that very often, especially with the show, but since they've cut down to, so they've cut down to the base storylines now, where we have, okay, the aliens with Kit, Alma, and Grace, and then we have Sister Jude and Monsignor slash Briarcliffe, and then we have Lana. So, I mean, there's only three things going on at the moment in this, aside from Dylan McDermott, but Dylan McDermott as the present-day bloody face kind of guy kind of interludes with Lana as well, so that's part of the three. So it opens up with the scene where we see Kit taking a bloody axe out of a body and having that nice little sound when he does it, sitting down in a chair with blood covering his face, and you hear, "Daddy!" And he says, "Daddy will be right there in a minute." And roll the title sequence. So that's kind of a interesting way to start the episode, especially when they talk about, like, disturbing things that they started last episode with. I think this was a little bit more disturbing, especially just bringing the whole kid into it, because you don't know if the kid saw anything, you don't know what that's like so far. So after that, we come in with the whole happy life of Kit, Grace, and Alma, which is kind of, they film it in such a way that it is very of that time period, very 60s, you know, the bright colors, a little bit, the vest that Kit is wearing is always kind of makes me laugh. And it's a very, like, happy-go-lucky feel, but Grace is drawing aliens, like, nonstop. And she's very talented at it, going charcoal drawings, which I'm pretty horrible at. And we find out that the kids are named Julian and Thomas, or Jillian and Thomas. And it's one daughter and one boy. I believe Thomas is Grace's son, and Jillian is Alma's daughter, with Kit. So Kit comes in talking about, like, some sort of march. They're going to march down to Boston and do this amazing thing. And then Alma's not really into it. Grace says she's stay home. And then Alma has this little scene with Kit where she talks about Grace being obsessed with the aliens, because Grace is, I mean, she's kind of spiritual. As we've seen through this season, she's very into, like, looking past the basics and trying to see a bigger picture, or more just like a very extraterrestrial spiritual picture. Like, because her view on the aliens is they're the future. They're so far more advanced than any of us are ever dream of being. So we should just trust in what they're doing to us. And Alma is the exact opposite. Alma's like, F that. They're like a boy peeling the wings off a dragonfly, was, I believe, the analogy she used, which I think both are true. Of course, the aliens are much more advanced than the human race at this point. If they are aliens to begin with, we still have one more episode where they like to throw us for a loop for that kind of thing. But yeah, with peeling the wings off dragonflies, especially with seeing Pepper be brought into that, with giving her the voice to be the protector, and then stealing Grace away after she dies, and then putting her back with the baby inside of her. I mean, it is very experimental. It's very much like a child peering the wings off a dragonfly, trying to discover life itself and what that is. So we still have more. Alma begs Kit to go talk to Grace, to spend more time with Grace, because apparently Kit has been a little bit of an Alma's boy. And so she tells her to go to him, or go to her. She tells Kit to go to her, and Kit goes ahead and starts talking to Grace, and Grace is still drawing. Grace keeps drawing the aliens, and then when she thinks about the past, she keeps thinking of, it shows clips of when Grace axe murdered her entire family, which was a high point in her life, I'd say. And he's kind of consoling her, and as he's consoling her, you know, consoling always turns into passionate lovemaking, which abruptly ends with a scene of Alma on the opposite wall. So they have Kit's house is set up to piss his wives off, pretty much. I mean, if anyone else noticed that, like, what is wrong with you where you're going to have two women in your house, you have your two kids, and you have one room where you have Grace, and you have one room with Alma, but of course, the headboards of the beds are on the same wall, so, oh, you're going to have your night with Alma. Great. Well, Grace has to listen to that. Okay, you're going to have your night with Grace. Alma has to listen to that. Lovely. There's not going to be any drama in that household. They're going to just love each other. Fantastic planning on Kit's behalf on that. But then we see Alma freaking out because light passes through the windows. We hear glass breaking, and it seems like the aliens are back, but nope. It's apparently Billy Marshall and the gang with his truck throwing Molotov cocktails through the window to light their house on fire, which substantially scares the living crap out of Alma and puts her in a very unconsolable state, crying and completely. And Grace is just kind of like, I mean, Grace is kind of just indifferent to the whole thing. She just says, I'm strong, and Alma's not, because she thought it was the aliens. It has a scene where Kit talks to a cop, and there's the old fogey character in South Park always talks like this. Yeah, I'm the cop. Yeah. And that's basically the cop they bring in, is like this old fogey, creepy dude who's old school cop, very, you know, has those racist undertones where he's like, you're the boy that has that, you're the boy that has the half Negro baby and the white baby. You know, polygamy is illegal in this state. Yep, you know. So he's kind of an asshole. Cops aren't going to do anything, you know, like usual. And after that, it just kind of cuts down to Grace teaching Thomas some French. Lots and lots and lots of awkward camera angles in this scene. Lots of angles between Alma and Grace. They're having kind of a fight because Alma's being realistic about what the aliens are doing, and Grace is being all spiritual, religious experience. Because of course, Grace was brought back to life by them. I mean, it's not too far of a jump to throw that out there for it being considered a religious experience. And as they're getting more and more heated, it keeps cutting, giving a clip of Kit chopping wood. And that axe is kind of powerful, just knowing what Grace's background is with axe murdering her whole family. So seeing Kit chopping the wood, you think something's going to happen immediately. And Alma just finally slaps Grace and profusely apologizes. But it kind of shows that there is a lot of tension in that household, rightfully so, with the whole bed thing. And with, I mean, she's the wife of Kit, and Grace is not. So when she talks about how things were good before, things were better before he brought an axe murderer home, I mean, she's got a point. I can't exactly argue with that. It's like, I don't know. Back in those days, there were people you didn't bring home if you were in a white family, and I think one of those would probably be racist, and the other one would be an axe murderer. I wouldn't bring an axe murderer home to mommy. I wouldn't bring her home to wifey either. You know, it's just not a good thing. And after that, it's just kind of like breaks down the scene. Grace doesn't want to talk to Alma. Alma doesn't want to talk to Grace. And it shows it cuts to the nighttime where everyone's asleep, and Kit walks out the living room and sees Grace still doing those charcoal drawings of aliens and things like that. So he talks to her about why she's not sleeping, and she says she's wasted enough time sleep, she's wasted enough of her life just sleeping. And boom! Out of nowhere, there's an axe in Grace's back, and she gets another axe in her back, and she's axed about 3 times. I believe that Alma just wanted to axe her a question. Terrible joke. But no, seriously, Alma seriously just axed the hell out of Grace and starts speaking somewhat gibberish to Kit. We have to hide, we have to hide, we have to hide, we have to hide. Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly with Kit when you straight up just killed Grace right in front of him. And this cuts back into this opening sequence where Kit grabs the axe out of Grace's body and sits down in the chair with blood all over him. And then that's the opening scene. Daddy'll be in there in a minute. So that is the first, like, fourth of the episode that goes through what happens with Kit and Grace and Alma, which is, one sec. Which is kind of funny because the end of the last episode was, of course, him finding Alma, and this is set two or so years in the future from that. And yeah, it's just kind of like things went, I mean, 2 years, things went downhill pretty quickly for putting an axe in someone's back in 2 years of knowing them. All right, so then we cut to a nice little back to Briarcliff where we get Jude gambling on Candyland. And she is taking Gumdrop Mountain like a boss. Seriously, she's owning this game. She's got Pepper to the left of her. Pepper is her, like, assistant now. Pinhead Pepper the assistant. And Jude has been renamed Betty Drake because it has the Monsignor come in and talk to her saying that I will get you out of here. I have been, he's been promoted to Cardinal of New York, and he's going to be going to New York. But he's going to get Jude out of there, or not Jude, he's going to get Betty Drake, a.k.a. Sister Jude, out of Briarcliff. And he says that Jude's being childish, and there's a great line here where he says she's being childish, and she says, childish, hell, I'm the queen of Candyland. Gotta love it. That's some pretty good writing there. So he ends the conversation by saying, I'll make you a believer. And then when we're in the kitchen, we see Jude talking to Pepper on the stairs. She's talking to Pepper saying, there's something in his eyes this time. There's something in his eyes this time. He's going to do it. And Pepper just gives the pretty depressing line of, there's nothing in his eyes. And we find out later that to be true, fairly. And as we're in the kitchen scene, it shows Jude sitting down next to Pepper talking, and then suddenly the camera shakes a little bit, and we see a blurry woman entering with her two cohorts. And it is the Angel of Death in human form, and she is beginning to look just like, and in this show now, she looks with the makeup, the Gotti makeup, the inmate makeup, she looks much like the maid she played in season 1, which was pretty nice. So we have her come in. She's got her two cohorts because they are merging people from the Institute for Women in Overflow at Briarcliff. So now we're going to have inmates with the, what are they called? Patients. Yeah. So that's going to be kind of crazy. And Jude's going a little crazy with her being in there because, of course, Jude has already seen the Angel of Death. So she recognizes this woman as the Angel of Death. And the woman who is the inmate is talking about how she's killed so many people. She's done this. She's been killing, like, the people who don't pay their taxes, don't pay their rent, like being the citizen of justice for taxpayer, kind of funny. But then she talks about how she's going to own this place. Like, she is the, like, since Jude's the person to talk to about who's running this place, She's going to be taking over with her two little lackeys. Well, one big lackey and one little lackey. And, yeah, it's pretty intense scene. The camera's very shaky. Jude's kind of going a little bit crazy in that. And then we see Alma enter the asylum. Jude looks down, after another conversation with Pepper, Jude looks down over the railing, and Alma's entering Briarcliff after she killed Grace, which makes sense, because that's kind of where you go when you're an axe murderer. Just ask Grace. We have another scene where it has Jude goes into her jail cell, and it's the other Angel of Death inmate. I didn't catch your name. Sorry, guys. I really just did not hear it. And she is talking with Jude about toying with her. She's like, you think I'm toying with you now? I'm not even started. I'm toying with you when you're mourning and groaning at my fingertips. So very bringing in the woman prison rape aspect of that inmate-outmate kind of thing. You know, just pulling in the whole prison experience into Briarcliff. And then we could pop back to Jude and Pepper. There's an argument between the Angel of Death and Rummy, I believe his name is. She tells him he wasn't supposed to take the pills. And, oh, look at people just looking down on me now. So she straight up stabs this guy in the middle of the room where everyone gets to hang out. She pulls a prison shiv and stabs the hell out of him. Blows a kiss to Jude, and Jude has a flashback of the Angel of Death wanting to kiss her in the prison cell. And as she's having that flashback, she starts freaking out and beating the woman up, and it cuts to what's actually going on, and is another inmate. I think it looked like the crony of the Angel of Death inmate. It looked like the fat crony of her, but I'm not sure if it was the same actress. She's beating her to hell, and Jude, like, doesn't even recognize who this woman is, because, of course, she's slightly insane if you haven't been watching the series so far. And they take Jude to the office, and they're asking, do you know where you are? And she almost says, my office. But no, you're Betty Drake now, so that's not your office. It's the new woman's office, who is this woman from the state, because they sold Briarcliff to the state after Monsignor became Cardinal Timothy. Well, Jude's talking to the woman and talks about, can you put me in touch with Monsignor Timothy? And the woman's like, you mean Cardinal Timothy? And she's like, yeah, Cardinal Timothy. I saw him last Monday. He said he'd get me on release. And it is now revealed to us at this point that it has been 2.5 years since last Monday in our eyes of watching the show. So it's been 2.5 years, and Jude is still in Briarcliff. Monsignor Timothy had nothing in his eyes because he really did not. He kind of set her up the bomb, like, just left her there. And she is missing, basically, her whole memory of those last 2 years. The woman tells her that she's messed with 5 roommates in the last 2 months. It's been 2.5 years since Tim left. And then when Jude talks about, what about Pepper? The woman says that Pepper passed in the winter of 66. So it's now about, it's 1968 right now. And Jude's kind of freaking out, and Jude is going insane or has gone insane. And it all started with Eunice throwing that electrical storm through her mind. And that's kind of what I feel like the switch was in Jude's brain. Because as we see through the series, Jude has been on top, then she's been lower while still on top, then she's even lower while she's in the asylum. But she was never out of her right mind until the moment when Eunice threw that threw the switch on full and sent her through hell of electroshock therapy on 80% charge more than you're supposed to have. One moment. Ugh. Man, gets hot in here. You got a drink, you know?
I didn't want dead air, so that's why I played that.
No, that's perfectly all right. Next time I drink, I'll just snap my fingers.
Okay, so
I don't
have
dead air. You know, but so that's kind of the end of Jude's segment this far in the episode. That's the next quarter of the episode was our nice trip to Briarcliff. And leaving Briarcliff, we enter Maniac. Dun dun dun. Maniac is the title of the book that Lana Winters has written after her exploits with Oliver Thredson, or his exploits with her, whichever way you look at it. And this is a 10-week straight New York Times bestseller, and she's at the library in the town they're in doing a book signing, and she decides that she will read an excerpt from her amazing book. And as she's reading this excerpt, she's talking about being locked in Thredson's dungeon and hearing the flicker of fluorescent lights and things going on, and suddenly she thinks that she's being watched at all times, and suddenly the door flies open, and it's more than one person, and Thredson brings a body down, and it's another woman, and says, "This is our toy." And this is kind of where they pull aside from reality and throw into the psyche of what Lana is thinking right now with her guilt talking to her through ghosts of the past. We have Thredson stands up in the chair and says, "That is a damn lie." Basically just calls her out on lying through half her book, basically. And her defense is, "Well, you told me you'd do these things. You told me you'd do these things, and I just wasn't with you long enough for you to do them." And he says, "Well, you're just selling out your writing of the thing." And she says, "No, writing is the essence of truth." Right. Yeah. Oh, that was a pun there, right? You know, right? Okay, yeah. So then she lies. Then her lover, I totally feel bad because I can't remember her name. Her lover stands up and says, "You lied about being with me too, because you call me a roommate in the story. You don't call me your lover," basically getting rid of our entire past, which I think it's funny to see that Lana has guilt about that when she calls her a roommate, when at the same time, her lover is the one who sent her to Briarcliff in the first place just to keep her teaching career in check. See how well that went for her, as she ended up frozen on Thredson's floor and eaten. I'm going to assume eaten. There was a line in the last episode where they talk about where she is and where she is, and Thredson says one line. He says, "Well, you'll always have Paris." And the sandwiches they made were like a very French thing to make. So I really think that that was like his subtle thing of throwing it back to the viewer. Hey, you ate her. I mean, you ate her. Yeah, that happened. So lots of lying in the book, and there's some nice imagery in the scene. If you've ever seen the early works of M. Night Shyamalan, he does this a lot, where we have color that contrasts, and you have very important colors that just kind of pop, and they're kind of themes throughout the movies he does. In the bookstore, there's lots of earthy, dark browns. Everyone has, lots of people have red hair, things going on. And the only spark of color is Lana's dress. She is the only thing that is different and out of the ordinary for this scene. And it goes to say for the rest of the episode, Lana is the only one that is wearing the bright colors like that. Everyone else is just kind of in there in the earthy tones, just so it makes her pop out more. She seems more, it puts her on a higher level, and it makes her have that celebrity feel to her, even when you're not even thinking. It's like a subconscious filmmaking thing, which is pretty cool. And of course, she is a celebrity now, because she gets to treat her assistant like shit. And yes, that's another Hollywood thing, treating your assistant like crap. The coffee was cold, she should have went down to the other store, or the coffee was warm, or the water was warm, she should have went across the street to the place, got ice, made it, yeah. Is he here? Oh, we got JC on the line, and I'm happy to talk to JC on the line.
What is up, AfterBuzz TV Nation? What is going on, Steven? What did you think, man? How crazy was this last episode? Jesus.
It was pretty up there. I've just been going over through like each segment, because they kind of cut it up into quadrants this episode. You know what I mean?
Right. Because there's so much going on, and it's tying everything up and setting things up, and you're doing an amazing job. Sorry I couldn't be there this week, guys. The flu got me this week, so I'm out. But
I didn't get you sick because I didn't have the flu, even though you were so afraid last week.
I call it it was the AfterBuzz virus. There you go. I caught some of that, but. But we'll be back soon. Definitely we'll be back next week, because there are so many things going on next week. I don't have a spoiler, but I tend to read a lot of the EW interviews with Ryan Murphy. He gives one every week, and he gave so many nuggets of what's going to happen next week. And if those that are concerned about spoilers or anything like that, Definitely tell you guys to just, you know, turn away. I mean, stop listening for about 30 seconds because there's one huge nugget, and I'll leave it at that. I don't know if you want to hear it, Steven.
We can hear it. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
All right. 30 seconds. I'm timing you, and get that off your chest. Go.
Okay. I'm probably only going to need like 5 seconds of it because there's not exact details of it, but I do know this is from Ryan Murphy himself. There will only be one survivor.
Like of the main original cast?
There will only be one left by the end of next week's episode.
Sounds good.
Out of everyone, there's only one person that's going to be left through the whole carnage. So you got to figure out how that's going to turn out. So I think the interesting thing, in a way, is who's going to survive? Is it Lana? Is it Jude? Is it Kit?
It's going to be Jude. It's definitely going to be Jude.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, you think it's Jude? All right, and that's it. That's the only really big one that I just want to lay on you guys. The rest of the stuff that, you know, and it's spoiler stuff is done now, but a lot of stuff with, like, you know, let's say with, I don't know if you covered this, because like I said, I've been in and out with Jude about, you know, her memory loss and whatnot, and it's because she's on chlorpromazine, which if you research it, it really, what it does is it causes huge gaps of memory loss and amnesia to every patient. So I think, you know, what Ryan Murphy was trying to do in this episode is really show, you know, just the effects of our mental health system. You know, well, he said that he was going to tackle that this season.
Is that what is that what the state woman who was in Jude's old office says she's going to bump her dose up of?
Yes, it is.
Okay, course, yeah. I thought about that. I was like, wow, what is she doping her up with? And then she's going to give her more of it? What the hell?
Exactly. And the interest, the best part about it, I think Jude was actually these aren't spoilers, but they're clues for next season. And Jude said so many clues. This episode had so many clues. The internet's been going crazy about it all. Like, the forums have been talking about it.
Was Candyland a clue?
It's definitely going to be about witches.
Was the gambling and Candyland a clue?
Yes, this is all speculative, but we're thinking it's definitely voodoos and witches, absolutely, because of the king and queens. Yes, like I wrote it down, even though I had full intention of trying to be there, guys, but let's see. When Judah's talking about the Queen of Candyland, there is the voodoo queen of New Orleans is known as Marie Laveau. And that was a direct reference to that, because remember, we're thinking next season's going to take place in New Orleans. It's either New Orleans or Salem, but I'm almost thinking it might take place in both.
Well, I could see maybe both. I could definitely see the New Orleans just from the fact that Grace was teaching the child French. That's another clue, because Grace, of course, is French in real life, but we don't have her character being French at all in the show. So the fact that she's teaching her child French is kind of a little buzz that into. I'll chalk that up as a clue to next season.
Right, and another clue was when Jude and Kit were talking, and Jude mentioned that I don't need a hat; I just fly my ass on out of here, like a witch.
She stole my hat.
And during that whole monologue, she also mentioned Tuesday Weld. And Tuesday Weld is a 60s actress who actually her biggest role she ever had was in the movie The Crucible. Which, what is The Crucible about?
Witches.
The Salem Witch Trials.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up in just a second, but good call.
No.
I wrote down Tuesday Weld, and I had Googled who she was, and I thought that was an interesting point. But yeah, it's definitely good to go over that, because you know a lot more of these clues about this than I do, because I don't even put them together too quickly for next season.
No worries, man. But you guys are doing great so far, man. You know, like I said, I believe next week we'll all be there, and just to wrap up everything that's going on, I take it you're getting into the bloody face part now, correct?
Yeah, I'm just about to go into Kit showing up at the book signing and go into the sequence of scenes that we have there. Do you want to stay on the line and just do the show with me, man? I mean, we can do that.
Yeah, sure, sure. Now, quick little nugget, like all the stuff I get through the internet, you know, to lead you in into the cafe scene. The cafe, I believe, was called Boylston Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And if you do a Google search on Boylston, Boylston is a street in Salem, Massachusetts.
Well, shit. There you go. Oh, man. They're really throwing them in there.
Yeah, you're welcome, guys. Yeah, so, sorry, with further ado, Steven, let us know. So what did you think of the cafe scene?
Well, the cafe scene was interesting because they kept going in and out of what they were talking about and bringing in scenes that that had to do with that. So it's basically like it felt somewhat like Family Guy. Oh, like this is the time I did this, and then it cuts to watch that scene. Oh, this is the time I did this, cuts to watch that scene. Seemed a little bit like that, but it was interesting, kind of. Not too confusing, which is good. The camera angles in every scene were different, if you noticed that. We had a lot of over the top angles. We had a lot of like sideways curved angles. I don't know if you can look up who was the director on this episode, because I'm not sure if it is the same guy who did the last one. He's doing the finale.
It wasn't Alfonso Rejon. Rejon, he did Spilt Milk.
Okay.
Last week, and he's doing the finale.
Okay, so he is doing the finale. It was very camera angles were all over the place this episode, ridiculously so.
Yeah. Well, see, it's cool that we both. It's how interesting that, you know, we're both watching the same thing and we're picking up completely. You know, like you're picking up the visuals so much so that I completely missed. I really picked up the fact of just the change in Lana's character. And at first I judged it because I was just like, she became this the opposite of who she's been throughout, this idealist, this crusader. You know, she was always the one fighting. She's always the one to, like Kit said, the journalist. And at first I was about to judge her. I was like, she became Hollywood. But, you know, and of course, guided by the EW article, you know, what Ryan was saying, that she lost her way, granted, with everything that happened to her. But somehow I think she's going to rectify that and come back. He said, you know, Ryan Murphy said that his influence for Lana this episode was very, let me get the author. She's a famous author. She wrote Valley of the Dolls.
I don't remember the name.
Yeah, she, but he said it was very, you know, Truman Capote meets Jacqueline Suzanne. And that's the influence that he got for Lana's character, you know, for this move for her. And Jacqueline was this very, pretty much a fame whore.
Oh.
And in a way, you could say Lana became a fame whore.
Well, she was always after about getting her name out there and selling the story. Okay,
right,
and
right, no,
we
so,
have, we have, wait.
That's oh, the director
that's
of this
director
episode.
Craig Zisk?
Yeah.
Okay, Craig Zisk was the director of this episode. I couldn't, so he was the one who directed this episode.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, our part-time model, Martin.
Oh, Martin.
Nice. Yeah, so, I mean, it left you with food for thought and whatnot, and then Kit's just such a do-gooder. You gotta love him, you know. But what is he going to be? Where does his storyline end? I know Grace said that he was meant for something great, or that his kids were. I'm still waiting to see what that it is, you know? And how are they going to tie it all up in this final episode? It blows my mind. And somehow they say they're going to tie it up. Ryan Murphy said that this next episode is the greatest episode he's ever been involved in any of his shows.
Who was the one who killed Martin Luther King? Do you know the name? Because we're talking like we have a lot of that popping up in this episode, and what if Kit's the one who does that? Because we have them talking about the march at the beginning of the episode. We have them turning on the TV and talking about Martin Luther King giving a speech in the middle of the episode, and then we have Kit who only has his kids left and nothing else to do.
That is so interesting. I'll definitely look it. I will look it up, Steven. I don't know if I did during the show, but
well, yeah. I don't know. I don't see Kit assassinating him, but I see Kit being involved in that in some way, like them bringing those two together. Just from what they're cluing into right now with the media that's in the episode.
But
let's
very interesting.
Let's just run through this real quick with me and see if there's anything that you kind of noticed that was kind of interesting. So we have the kid. He shows up to the book signing. They go for a coffee, and it was interesting because she's like, "Yeah, I wish I because she had heard about Grace." And
right.
Lana heard about that Alma killed Grace, and she wanted to write Kit, but she didn't. But then she's surprised when Alma is in Briarcliff, and every time Kit mentions Briarcliff, she brings up something else, like, "Oh, I'm writing a book on this. I'm writing a book on Lee Emerson, who escaped and killed 7 nuns." And
right.
That was Santa, and she's like thinking of a name for the book, and she's like the Santa Claus Killer or something. And then he calls her out for not being able to get Briarcliff shut down. He tells her about Alma, tells her about the kids, and then we get a shot of the guy pulling a catheter out and flailing it around, him talking to Alma in the prison or in Briarcliff. We get a shot of them having sex on a chair, and then he says, "Well, not anymore," and we find out that Alma is dead because her heart stopped just randomly, apparently. And he tells Alma while she's dead, she says, "I completely failed you." And I didn't, what do you think that kind of means? Because he, of course, like as a husband, in a way he did, because he brought Grace home and everything. But I don't know, do you think he was, because he could have seen Lana earlier to try to get Alma out. And I think, is that what he means? Like he failed to get her out or what?
You know, I remember the scene, and I thought to myself, what did he mean by that? And I almost think it could be from the very beginning, from the very first episode. You know, Kit is such a good doer that maybe he even blames himself that if he wouldn't have married her, she wouldn't have ended up in this place.
True.
You know, and I still don't think that's exactly it. But you know, that was my first thought. I mean, he's just so pure, so genuine of a guy that he probably blames himself for falling in love with her, for falling in love, and ultimately she paying for her life, because of the love.
And that does make sense. So we have Lana delivers a pretty good line. She says, "Everyone's gone but us." And that's when Kit's like, "What are you talking about? Jude's still alive." And wait, what? Like, I saw her death certificate. She killed herself. No, when he was going to visit Alma, he saw Jude. And it's packed. It shows Briarcliff, and it's packed like a madhouse. It's the overflow from the prison, all the inmates, and it's just crazy. Things are going ridiculous there. And an interesting little thing that they kind of threw in there that I thought that... I think they're going to bring up next episode that we might forget about without noticing it, is how would you like her burial handled? And Kit says that he'll take her home and bury her himself.
Huh.
So I'm wondering... What?
Oh, I was going to say, that's interesting that he's taking her... do you think possibly... He thinks that maybe the, I don't know, this is a stretch, maybe the aliens?
Can I throw a prediction out here real quick?
Of course, it's your show.
So Grace dies, and Grace comes back after Arden basically kills Kit.
Oh.
So he takes Alma's body back home, and if next episode we see Kit, like, killing himself... to get the aliens to come, and perhaps they'll save Alma if he's with her body.
Yes, that is spot on.
Something like Kit bringing the aliens himself, or setting it up so they come for him, and trying to get Alma saved or something like that. But yeah, that's what I can kind of see. June, this is where Jude kind of, it's Kit and Jude, Kit talks to her. I think Jude at this point thinks that Kit's not real, that he's just like a figment of her imagination talking to her, because he says, Sister Jude. She kind of continues to just talk on her story, ignore it. She talks about the show. Did you happen to look up what show that was? Because it was like she was talking about how the characters were her and how Sister Bertrude is possessed and like Eunice and everything. Like, it's her story.
Which one? Hold on. I'm sorry. It was hard to pick up that last part. What was that?
The TV show that Jude is watching.
The Flying Nun?
Is that what the show is called?
I believe that's what she was watching. Honestly, just if I had to guess, it was immediately, I said, that looks like it's The Flying Nun.
Okay, because she's talking about how Sister Bertrude in the show is possessed, and that's Eunice, and the other sister is herself, and the show is about herself.
And remember, we've been saying this all week. I wanted to save it for predictions, but I think a major part of the storyline is not schizophrenia, but it's basically the terrors that are conjured up by our own self. That the biggest horror comes from our own mind.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of this is still coming. You know, there have been clues throughout the season about Jude possibly, you know, making all this stuff up. Remember the little girl she ran over, supposedly?
Yeah.
That she did not run over. You know, all these things, you know, what is real in Jude's world? You know, I mean, I want to say for predictions because I think I know who's going to be alive by the end.
Okay, well, we're almost there. We have, like, one more scene to do. So we have Kit pushing to shut the place down, and Lana delivers a really powerful line. She says, every bed in that place she made, which is like her kind of dismissing Jude as that's her place to be, just because Lana's kind of becoming a little bit hardened by everything that goes on. And she talks about how she wove straw into gold through her career and everything like that. And the assistant comes in, says that you have about a dozen more people who need autographs, so Kit leaves, gets in his truck, and they splice the scene here with the present day in 1969 going into, as Kit pulls away, we see, what's his present day name? I'm sorry. I know it's Dylan McDermott, but what's the guy's name?
Johnny Thredson?
Yeah, Johnny, that's right. We see Johnny in the car smoking, I believe it's either meth or crack, it's a crack pipe, and he walks into the library, and he's trying to find the autographed book. And he says that this is the only store. The store is going out of business. It's the mother of the librarian who was setting up the book signing in the first place with Lana. And it's like her book, her signed copy. And when he says that he's the son, he's the rightful heir to it. She says that the son died at birth. That's the only person mentioned in the book. And then he goes into a very powerful monologue about how he is going to pull out his 9mm, put it in Lana's face, and pull the trigger.
Okay, now, what did you think? I mean, because Dylan McDermott's gotten a lot of flack. I always keep hearing that he's kind of like, this is from reading from the internet and stuff like that. People have always said that he's a little bit wooden in his deliveries. I thought that monologue, just what he was doing with his eyes and the scene, just what I loved it. I'd never seen that side of Dylan McDermott in any character he's ever portrayed. I thought he was fantastic in the scene. Amazing.
He was good. I think what people have a problem with is he doesn't show conflict. Like, he's just so dead set on killing Lana that he's not really showing any conflict with his emotions at all. Like, Thredson showed lots of conflict even with killing the woman he killed, but Dylan doesn't really show any conflict at all, even though he should be more confused about who he is and why he's doing what he's doing. So I think that's probably what the complaints are from. But when we're having someone like this who's, like, stoned out on crack, who's getting through all this shit, I mean, it makes sense that he's going to say what he's going to say, and he needs to intimidate this woman. He says, I gave you my price, now you're going to – or you I asked for your price, now I'm going to give you my price. And she finally hands him the book, and he sees the signature, and he said – well, she shows him the book first, sees the signature, says, this is the closest I've gotten to my mom in 48 years since she dumped me. And that's kind of how it ends, with him getting the book. So we have scenes where Lana's confessing to what happened in Briarcliff. We takes her back to Briarcliff, and we see Cardinal Timothy entering the picture. And that's kind of what the scenes were. Before we cut into news and gossip, I do want to say, please go to iTunes. It's 43 minutes into the show, and this is kind of late for this, but seriously, it really helps us out if you go to iTunes, type in AfterBuzz space American, and then you'll see us right at the top of the search list. It says American Horror Story After Buzz After Show. Click on that, go down to ratings, give us 5 stars, talk about how much you love me and hate everybody out. No, I'm just kidding. How much you love us and how much you enjoy the after show, or if you just want things to, if you want to like tell us something that we might have missed, you can say that on iTunes, or you can definitely check it out on YouTube. We always have these videos up the next day where you can watch the whole episode, listen to it, and comment and have a conversation with the people who are all commenting it as well. Thanks again. And JC, any last comments with like the last scene before we go into news and gossip?
I slightly disagree with your analysis of this, of that last scene, because of the lack of conflict, because I'm thinking of it through his perspective.
Uh-huh.
Of the fact that for 40 years, he's had this one goal. He almost sees it, because he even said that his last words were his fate. He was, this is his fate. Almost his destiny. He's so close to finally achieving what he's wanted through, a resolution, closure. His life is complete. It's almost a macabre type of excitement that I'm finally going to end this.
And he even says he's going to finish his father's work.
Exactly. So, but he's a man on a mission.
I know. The reason I don't see his character as a true character is that it has no past. His character has no past at all. And if that doesn't make sense, let me explain it to you for a second. When you're building a character as an actor, you need to create a beginning, a middle, and up to the point they are at. You need to create fake events. You need to create something that gives that character a structure to go on for emotions, for things like that. And his character doesn't have that. We have from when he enters, and we have now. I don't see 47 years of his life before now. I just see this year. Like, who the hell was he before he found out that his father was Bloody Face? Like, it seems just like so quick to go. JC, if you didn't know who your father was and you didn't know who your mother was, and I told you your father's a murderer, are you gonna just go start murdering people and want to go kill your mom? Like, it just
right.
It just doesn't seem realistic at all for his character. I think there could have been a lot more structure work done around his character, even if it made it a little bit less mysterious, but just giving him somewhat of a past.
So you're saying you wish he would have been, had the character fleshed out a bit more, just a bit more grounded. But due to the fact that maybe, and this has been our struggle most season, I think all of us that have been hosting the show, that there's so many storylines and not enough time to give each storyline its due justice.
Yeah, can't we have just gotten rid of one of the storylines and given one of the most important characters in the season a background, so we're not confused as to who the hell he is when he's going around trying to kill people just for his father's legacy? Like, he didn't know his father, he didn't know his mother, so why the hell is he like this? It's just kind of, I mean, they're leaning on the fact that not having a mother or father and being put in the foster system turns you into a murderer. They're leaning on that too much. But I don't know. I like his character, but I just feel like we only have a year of history on his character. We have nothing in the 48 years he's been alive to show that he's an actual human being, aside from him just being a character in a TV show.
Okay. All right. Well said. So I guess that's it for the episode. And, any other thoughts? I guess it's time for, like you said, news and gossip.
Let's do news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So we already kind of went through your interview with E.T., right?
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah. And did you have any other things to talk about, news and gossip-wise?
Not really. That was really it. I had no idea, that I was going to have anything ready for tonight. But I promise next week we'll have so many things. Going on. And actually, one of the people on chat roll let us know that I believe Evan Peters and let's see, Sarah Paulson have signed up for season 3 as well. So we now have, we have Jessica Lange, Sarah Paulson and Evan Peters all signed up. So like I said, I think the tough guy to get is going to be Zachary Quinto with Star Trek coming out and with a few other films he has in the can and things coming up. I think he's going to be the hardest kid of all so far, but with the supposed witches and voodoo type of theme that we're speculating for next season, I believe it'd be nice to see, let's say, the girl who played Alma this season. I'm sure she's going to be in next season as well. So there's room for other new characters. Let's say guy who played Lee, you know, Lee, the Santa killer.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting his name. Blame it on the flu right now, guys. But, you know, Ian McShane. I would love to see Ian McShane back. So, I mean, there's room for these other characters if, let's say, someone like Zachary Quinto doesn't make it for next season. So that's all I've pretty much got for our speculative news and gossip.
Well, I mean, there is room for new characters even if he does make it back. I honestly would bet my life that he's going to be on season three just because he has a series loyalty. And we've seen that in Heroes, which made his career. I mean, there's no way he's going to drop out of a series before it ends unless they kill his character again. But
maybe next season they could have him pull a Drew Barrymore and they'll have him on the first episode and kill him off in the cold open for for next season episode one. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, I mean, even that, but I'm absolutely 100% sure that he'll be on next season just because him as an actor, like, you don't like the way his career has been going. There's no way he's going to shortstop his TV. His TV career just to make room for his movie career. But,
you know, we've got fans even saying that they wish that Connie Britton will come back, but I think she's busy doing Nashville, but it'd be great. I thought, you know, she was the mainstay of season one, so we'll see. You never know.
You never know. So I think that's about it for news and gossip.
Yeah, that's it. Let's move on to our predictions, final predictions before the finale. This should be great.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Ooh, the lights. All right.
You know that music sounds really obnoxious over the phone. Just letting you know, Martin. Love it. Love it in studio, but on the phone, good Lord, nearly blew out my ear.
I just sound really obnoxious, period, right?
Sorry, JC. I was trying to turn it down for you, but then I thought, meh.
Martin needs to host some shows. Martin has that nice radio voice. Hello, good evening. I'm Martin Vaez, and this is my AfterBuzz TV after show.
Hey, did you see? Hey, there's a quick shot of Martin. Do that shot again, Martin.
Oh, look at you, dog.
What shot?
Oh.
All
right, so what are the predictions? What do we got?
So
before I pass out from this flu, help me out, Steven. What is your prediction? What's going to happen in episode 13?
So I might throw some things out there, and they might not all intertwine perfectly because I'm just kind of going off the top of my head. So, of course, I believe that Jude is going to be the only one who survives the end of the season, just because she is the one who is the most sane at the beginning. To see her be the insane one at the end, being the only one alive, would just kind of put it to a nice close. I'm definitely thinking that Kit tries to lure the aliens by trying to kill himself, something like that, to save Alma. I believe that we're going to see some of Dylan McDermott going after Lana, and he's going to be stopped by an unlikely hero. That's what I'm thinking right now. Even if it's someone who has died already, hint, hint. Like, seriously,
true.
We're gonna see somebody who has already died come back to life in the next episode in the present time, and I seriously think they're gonna pull that on us. Other than that, I'm not quite sure. I think, of course, Father Timothy is going to get killed by the Angel of Death. The Angel of Death was such a weird part of this episode, so I'm wondering how they're going to bring it in the next one. I'm really curious about that. You go ahead.
You know, I didn't even get to see the trailer for next week yet. I'll probably watch it now. I don't know any of the little nuggets that the public got to see. But what I'm going with is actually, and I've said this all season, and this is a possible scenario. There's two fates for Jude. That most of this story is being told through her eyes. Through her mind. All of this is going on in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been seeing bits and pieces of that. But now if I'm wrong, she has to be dead because she will be pushing 100 years old. If she was, she'd be around 100, dude.
Yeah.
You know, literally. And there was something said in this past episode where it was referring to Jude and that she was going to have a very peaceful, like a peaceful end to her journey. I don't remember the exact words. If you guys rewatch this episode, let us know, tweet us or hit us on the chat roll or on iTunes. but there was a specific line directed towards Jude, and it was to the fact that she was going to have a very peaceful end. And that could be, you know, since I do know that Atlanta is going to come back, and she's going to shut down Briarcliff.
Yeah.
I do know that that's going to happen. And with that said, that'll, odds are that'll be a release of Jude, and, you know, so she'll pass away of happiness, you know, like she's going to die of old lady good, you know, old lady age. I think that's, you know, after all her tragedy throughout her life, I think she'll have a happy end to her. But I think who really survives in the end is Lana. Because in the end, there has to be someone that tells the story.
Oh,
she's always been the one that told the story.
Shit, I just thought of something.
And I do have one little thing, a prediction. And it's not even a prediction. It's more so a little nugget for everyone that's watching or listening. Next week, we are going to find out how or who took off Adam Levine's arm.
That's what I was about to say. Maybe the one who survives is Dylan McDermott.
He does confront Lana in the next episode. I'm pretty sure of that. So
let me throw out one real quick prediction then. This is pretty far-fetched. Let's say he hears about Lana going to shut down Briarcliff. He goes to Briarcliff to confront her, and as he's going to kill Lana or something like that, he somehow gets possessed by the Angel of Death and stays at Briarcliff.
You never leave Briarcliff.
Exactly. And then he's the present day Bloody Face possessed by the Angel of Death, who is also a demon just like Eunice in a way.
I mean, what a better end to that. What a better end than that. So I think that's it for predictions. Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of great stuff. Steven Payton, you are awesome, dude.
We have, I think Jackie will be with us on the finale.
Oh, fantastic. So we're going to be, so expect next week to have David back, myself back.
We're going to end it the way we started it. We want to end it the way we started it with a full team.
There we go. And it all comes full circle. So I guess that's about it. So is this when we give out? I can't hear anything. So is this when we give out our Twitter handles?
JC, give it out before I start playing the outro music, because the outro music will be just as annoying in your phone as the prediction. So give it out now so we can say goodbye to you.
Hey, thanks for listening, guys. And definitely you can find me at The Everyday Man. And just tweet me any of your questions for the finale or just anything about AfterBuzz and all sorts of fancy newsy type stuff.
Hey, have you shaved yet?
Find out next week.
Oh, find out next week.
All right, bye, JC.
Bye, JC. Thanks so much, man. You're always helping me out on this. Okay, let's roll that outro music and get the hell out into next week for our last finale episode of American Horror Story. I am your host, Stephen Lemieux. You can find me at Stephen Lemieux on Twitter. It's StephenLemieux. Or you can find me again tonight on the AfterBuzz After Show for Archer, because I want you to grill me a cheese. And that's our show. I will see you next week with a full cast of David Skifalitti, JC Rubio, and hopefully, if she can come, Jackie Borowski. That's our show. Take care.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.